Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Your favorite hour of the day is now underway. Coming to you live here on Michigan State's campus, as you just heard my man Chayo say, it is December 11th, 2018. We come to you on a Tuesday, and we got a fun show planned. I'm really excited to dive into the show because there are a few juicy topics that we'll be sounding off on. I want to give a big shout out to two players who will certainly be inducted one day into the Basketball Hall of Fame. We saw these two players go at it for one last time last night in the world of the National Basketball Association. I'm talking about Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, who were a part of the same NBA draft class in the early 2000s. Both have gone on to have illustrious careers, even winning a couple of NBA championships together, both as players for the Miami Heat. Well, Dwayne Wade, this is his swan song season. So the Lakers took on the Miami Heat last night in Staples Center, and they had a pretty emotional goodbye as they will go at it on the court. They went at it on the court for one last time. So I just want to acknowledge that, and we'll have a really cool bite if you missed that moment last night to play for you all. Also, there was a Monday Night Football game on as the Minnesota Vikings and the Seattle Seahawks went at it. And after the final result, I think we can legitimately have the conversation whether or not Kirk Cousins is overrated. Because I sat there and watched that game last night. Especially that first half was ugly. I mean, only like 20-plus passing yards for Cousins in the first half. And, you know, you lose to the Seahawks. This was a very winnable game for a Minnesota Vikings team that was expected to go pretty far in this year's NFL playoffs. And I think we can legitimately have the conversation. I think we've been having the conversation throughout the year whether or not Matthew Stafford for your Detroit Lions is overrated. But you look at the money that Kirk is getting paid, and you can kind of have a similar conversation, all right? Speaking of the Lions, we'll put a lid on what happened against the Arizona Cardinals, and believe it or not, the Detroit Lions, with that win over AZ over the weekend, the Lions statistically still have a shot at making the postseason. You know, I can't believe that. So we'll talk about that as well, and then we'll end the show on Harbaugh not leaving the University of Michigan football program and the expectations that will be next season for the Maize and Blue. So, I told you, a juicy show today. A lot of interesting topics. We encourage you to be a part of the hour. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. We have the live stream up and running there, and you can weigh in courtesy of Twitter. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports, or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. Here are your quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with some news concerning a few Michigan State athletes in the world of college football. Cole Chewins has been named as an academic All-American for the second straight year. The Michigan State redshirt. Yeah. We do, Kirk. The Michigan State redshirt junior offensive tackle yesterday was named to the academic All-American Division I second team, which was selected by the College Sports Information Directors of America. He was selected to the first team last year and was one of eight players from the Big Ten to earn academic All-American honors this season. Chewins joined Michigan State as a walk-on in 2015's class before earning a scholarship the following year. He has 24 starts and 35 career games with the Spartans. Also, if there's a Willikas, there's a way. I like that.
Shazam,
Tom Izzo. For the second time in 5 days, Kenny Willikas earned All-American recognition. The Michigan State redshirt junior defensive end was named a second-team All-American by the Football Writers Association of America yesterday. Willikas was selected as a second-team All-American by the Walter Camp Football Foundation. Willikas has 20.5 tackles for loss, which ranks first in the Big Ten Conference and is the second highest single season total in program history, trailing only Julian Peterson's 30 back in 99. He has 76 total tackles, 8.5 sacks, 12 quarterback hurries, a forced fumble, and a fumble recovery, and was, of course, the Big Ten Smith Brown Defensive Lineman of the Year. Two Spartans will be making their way to Mobile, Alabama for the annual Senior Bowl. Michigan State safety Kari Willis and running back LJ Scott have both accepted invitations to play in the game. The 2019 Senior Bowl will be televised on January 26th at Ladd Pebble Stadium in Alabama, and that will be a 2:30 p.m. kick time. With a bowl game as huge as the Red Box Bowl, the NFL Network, I guess, will carry that one. Is that accurate? I'm reading the NFL Network carrying the Red Box Bowl. That's kind of surprising. No, that's not it. Okay, so the Senior Bowl. Okay, the Senior Bowl. Thank you for that correction, fellas. MSU Oregon. I want to talk about the swag, though. Check this out. Red Box Bowl gifts for both Michigan State and Oregon will be headphones, a Fossil watch, a Timbuktu backpack, whatever that is, Roku, which is a streaming TV device, and Redbox Bowl merchandise. That's pretty cool. So you get a watch, you get a backpack, you get a Roku streaming TV device, and headphones. I love the swag that is announced for these bowl games, right? It's the least you can do for college athletes who don't get paid and bring numerous amounts of money to respective big universities like Michigan State and Oregon. The Spartans will face the Ducks in the December 31st Red Box Bowl at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. It will be the second straight year Michigan State closed the season in Cali following a 42-17 win over Washington State in the Holiday Bowl last December in San Diego, if you're Ryan Burgundy. All right, on a related note, Michigan and Florida players will be feeling peachy to know that they also are getting some bowl swag, and Michigan players will be getting plenty of it prior to that December 29th Peach Bowl game against Florida. That will be on ESPN at noon. Now, bowl organizers revealed yesterday the list of gifts the 7th-ranked Wolverines and Gators will receive, and the list includes 5 different items, those being a $300 Vanilla Visa gift card. I don't know what Vanilla Visa means, but I guess it's a gift card somewhere. Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl Fossil Watch. So they also get a Fossil Watch. I'm a big fan of Fossil. I'm rocking one right now.
Me too. I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, I gotta love Fossil Watches. Right, Alec? Mophie? What is that?
It's a portable charger.
A portable charger.
Like portable, like you can plug anything into it, and it's a portable charger.
How do you say that? Is that Mophie or Mophie?
I think Mophie.
Mophie. Power Station XL portable charger. There you have that. Also, an Amazon Echo Dot and a Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl souvenir football.
So there you have that. I'm curious about the $300 vanilla Visa gift card. So is that like you can just go anywhere with that thing? What does vanilla Visa mean? What is that?
It's pretty much just a Visa like card that you get. It's $300.
So you basically get $300 to spend it on whatever?
Yeah, and it's like a loophole that the NCAA went around because they can't technically directly give money to the players, so they had to just do it that way.
I've never heard of that before. So basically every player gets $300 to do what you will. All right. And also last year, Michigan players received a $125 gift card. That was to Best Buy. A Justin's ring. Also a Fossil watch. Man, Fossil just giving away watches, man. I need to play in one of these bowl games. Outback Steakhouse gift card and a hat for also playing in the Outback Bowl. All right, also, Michigan State junior Samantha McLean has been named to the College Sports Information Directors of America, Google Cloud. Man, that's so long. College Sports Information Directors of America, Google Cloud Academic All-America team announced yesterday. An Academic All-Big Ten and Big Ten Distinguished Scholar honoree as a sophomore, McLean is also active in community activities, serving on the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. She was the team's most inspirational player winner in 2017 after having her sophomore season cut short in an accident. McLean was one of 21 athletes chosen throughout Division I volleyball. She is also one of just six non-seniors to make one of the three teams. So Samantha McLean of MSU Volleyball named to the College Sports Information Directors of America, Google Cloud Academic All-American team. And my Detroit Pistons, not playing well, playing without actually their best player last night without Blake Griffin. And they were not able to beat the Philadelphia 76ers 116-102. The final, Luke Kennard led the way for the Pistons with 28 points, while Andre Drummond finished with the night with 21 points and a double-double. With the loss, the Pistons fall to 13-12, looking to bounce back tomorrow against the Charlotte Hornets. And the Detroit Red Wings, we go now behind the glass for hockey fanatic Alec Rio and also engineer of today's Current Sports. Alec, what's up with the Wings? What happened last night?
All right, so the Red Wings young guns, they shined as they beat the Los Angeles Kings 3-1. Rookie defenseman Dennis Cholowski had a laser snipe goal top shelf, and Dylan Larkin had a highlight reel goal where he danced around a defender and made Jonathan Quick look like an AHL goaltender. Jimmy Howard was also stellar in last night's game, stopping 42 of 43 shots. Here's the bite of all the Wings' goals.
Brought ahead by De La Rose for in. Cholowski joins the rush, gives it to him. Cholowski right in, scores! A beautiful shot! Top shelf, Cholowski! To you. Into the slot, backhanded, Nielsen safe, scores on the rebound! Forport gave it away, Larkin right in on goal, he scores!
Wow. What did I just say?
So how about the Wings? That's a pretty impressive win, 3-1. As the Wings are surprising many in the hockey world right now, because many like me thought this was not going to be a stellar year, but they're making something happen. All right, and also the Detroit Tigers, one headliner of note for them, free agent righty Tyson Ross, and the Tigers have reached a one-year deal for $5.75 million. Ross went a combined 8-9 with a 4.15 ERA for San Diego and St. Louis last year. He made 22 starts for the Padres. He was claimed off of waivers by the Cardinals in early August and pitched 9 times for St. Louis, 8 of them in relief. All right, that does it for your quick hit headliners. Again, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. That is the number to call. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News and watch the live stream there, and you can tweet the show. Tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or tweet the show at WKAR_sports.
LeBron and Wade hugging each other in the corner. They were matched up with each other in the final seconds. Two great champions. One last dance.
That's nice.
And LeBron, 16 wins. D Wade, 15.
And they'll talk about that over dinner.
And I'll tell you what, Miami is staying in town, so they will be doing just that.
There's the jersey exchange.
Shaka Khan, keep on reaching. Produced by the great Quincy Jones. Again, I'm like on a Quincy Jones binge this week. And I have been, I think, since the weekend after watching Quincy on Netflix. One of the greatest to ever do it. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am the man behind the mic, your host, Al Martin. A lot to get to. A lot to get to on today's show. What you just heard was the voice of... I don't even know their names. I'm sorry. Two Lakers broadcasters out in L.A. as they put in perspective the moment that was LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, the final game between these two NBA basketball legends. It was pretty cool to watch. It was a close game. I didn't expect this one to be close. But, you know, Dwayne Wade had an opportunity to possibly tie the game when a three-pointer and send the thing into overtime, but he missed. His teammate had a chance for another three. That one clanks off the iron. Game over. And you saw both Wade and James embrace in the left corner of the court, hugging each other, had a few words. They swapped jerseys. They signed each jersey, took a picture, and that was all she wrote. That's the last time, unless somehow, some way. This will never happen. Never happen. Unless somehow the Lakers win the West, the Heat win the East. Come on now. This is the last time that we will ever see LeBron James and Dwayne Wade go at it on the basketball court against one another. Pretty cool moment, I must say, because these are two guys that came into the league with one another. You know, they developed this friendship right off the bat, became best of friends. Played with one another in Miami, won two rings with the Heat, and have stayed close ever since. You know, it's quite amazing. I mean, just two guys playing the game they love, entering the league together, and becoming friends after entering the league and being a part of the same class, and going on to have immense success. I mean, there are players that only dream about the kind of careers that James and Wade had. And, you know, you heard LeBron also, some of the audio picked up the exchange they had right after the buzzer sounded. And, you know, you heard LeBron say something to the like of, man, you know, yeah, this is the only way we could have done it either here or in New York, which I don't know how they would have worked that out to have a Miami Heat and L.A. Lakers game in the Garden, in Madison Square Garden. I don't know how that would have worked out, but, you know, it's a big stage out in L.A. You know, a lot of celebrities were at the game last night, and to see that moment is pretty cool. I must say, I will miss Dwayne Wade. You know, Dwayne Wade is one of those guys, and don't tell my former engineer Isaac Constance that, because Isaac just was not a big fan of Dwayne Wade and thought he was a dirty player. But, you know, we used to always debate that on the show left and right. But, you know, Dwayne Wade, you can't deny the numbers. You can't deny the accomplishments. You know, he was a fearless player who, in many ways, if you look at the game of Dwayne Wade, he patterned a lot of his game off of Michael Jordan. You know, that mid-range jumper, you know, that fearless attack to the basket. And it was Kobe-esque, and you know where Kobe got his moves from as well. I mean, he just lived watching VHS tapes of Come Fly With Me in Michael Jordan's playground, right? I mean, you know, a lot of similarities between the game of Wade and a guy like MJ, and that's, you know, come to find out, you know, like midway through Dwayne Wade's career, that's the guy that he watched and tried to mimic and tried to emulate, right? So, and I got a chance to see Dwayne Wade in person for, you know, the first ever time on this farewell tour. You guys know my mom lives out in the Miami area, and we scored some tickets over Thanksgiving break, and I got a chance to watch the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets go at it on the basketball court. Not the sexiest NBA game, but it was really cool just to see Dwayne Wade on the basketball court moving around and to see the reaction from the fans. They really love Dwayne Wade out there because, I mean, come on now. I mean, Dwayne Wade, one of, you know, the household names in franchise history. And there's a lot of love for what he has done in the community down there in the Miami area and for everything that he did for the franchise. So salute to LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, for putting on a nice show last night and competing on the basketball court for one last time. All right, we transition from that to a conversation that has been looming for, I believe, much of this NFL year, and it's one we have not yet embraced here on Current Sports, but I'm talking about Kirk Cousins, former Michigan State football quarterback who had a pretty good career here at Michigan State. You know, Kirk went on to just work hard and claw his way to a starting opportunity, you know, and took advantage of some pretty key moments when he was balling out for the Washington Redskins and was so impressive that, you know, the Minnesota Vikings saw something in Kirk and threw a lot of money at Kirk Cousins to be the guy behind center to possibly lead the Vikings to the promised land. $84 million, to be exact. But I got to be real with you guys. I mean, I sat on my couch along with flipping the TV back and forth between, you know, Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and, you know, the Minnesota Vikings and Seattle Seahawks Monday Night Football game. I sat back and watched Kirk and I just when it comes to my lens on how I watched that game last night, I really wanted to just kind of comb through what I was seeing just with Kirk Cousins. Because, you know, again, it's a conversation that has been had by many in this year's National Football League. And I got to be real. I see what people are talking about. You know, Kirk Cousins being overrated, at least based on what I saw last night. And I even went this morning and watched a few of his highlights throughout the year. $84 million for Kirk Cousins. I think he's a bit overrated. I just want to keep it 100. From my perspective, what I'm seeing from Kirk Cousins and what I saw last night, it was not an impressive performance. It was very underwhelming. 20 of 33 for Cousins, 208 yards and one TD pass, and I believe that touchdown came in like garbage time for the Vikings when it should have been 21-0. But again, you know, the Seahawks had called off the dogs, and that was a garbage time touchdown. And again, he passed for just 27 yards in the first half. That's the fewest in a game he started in his career. I just want to read a bit real quick of what Kirk had to say to ESPN. He talked with Courtney Cronin of ESPN.com, and Kirk said, quote, "I don't know what the scale of frustration is for that level, but certainly when you're not putting as many points on the board as you know you're capable of, or you've shown in past games, it's disappointing. I think the added piece of the disappointment is when your defense is playing so well, our defense, I feel the last couple of weeks or the last several weeks, has played playoff football, high-level football. And I put us in a position where we should and can be in the playoff conversation as a result of the way they are playing defense. You know that if our offense would bring it that way we've brought it in the earlier weeks of the season, we would be pretty dangerous. Yeah, without a doubt, Kirk. But, you know, and I like how, I will say this. I mean, this is, you know, Kirk is all class, and he will continue to be all class throughout his entire career. He did not point any fingers. He owned up to how bad that offense looked last night, and he put it primarily on his shoulders. You know, 0-7 is Kirk's record on Monday Night Football. On the Monday Night Football stage, first off, there's not many quarterbacks that can say they've played on Monday Night Football that many times. 7 times, and Kirk has not won one game. Cousins falls to 0-7 in his career on M&F, and that's the worst by a starting quarterback on Monday Night Football. That's according to the Elias Sports Bureau. The other two quarterbacks who are right behind Kirk, well, they're pretty big names. You know, I mean, these are NFL Hall of Famers. Archie Manning was 0-6, as well as Joe Namath, the great Joe Namath, also 0-6. But now Kirk breaks that record by being 0-7. That's pretty bad. Pretty bad. And this season, you know, if you want to measure the barometer of how good a quarterback or a team is in general, you know, you don't measure that stick against subpar competition that you're supposed to beat. You measure that stick against the elite. You know, that's the true litmus test, right? And this year, the Vikings are 0-5-1 against teams that enter the game with a winning record. 6-1 against teams that are 500 or worse. You know, and historically, you know, not just discussing the Minnesota Vikings here, historically that does fall in line with the career of Kirk Cousins. Cousins is now 4-23 all time against teams with a winning record. You know, overrated? That would certainly go right into that conversation and right into that argument. That plays right into that argument. 4-23, when you go against teams that have a 500 or better record, 4-23. So, further numbers that just blew my mind, you know, on social media when I was, you know, just watching the game and when the dust settled on that game. Get this. Kirk Cousins' career stats, his record in primetime games is 5-13. So when everybody's watching, primetime TV, 5-13. His record versus winning teams, I just said that. He is now, now an update to that, 4-24, with losing last night. Record versus winning teams this year, 0-5. Career road record, 12-23-2. And again, the Monday Night Football record, 0-7. So $84 million. That's the amount of money that the Purple People Eaters threw at Kirk Cousins to lead their franchise. And when it counts most against the elite competition in the National Football League, simple is this: Kirk Cousins just hasn't delivered. So it just blows my mind, and I think we need to have the conversation. I mean, what did the Minnesota Vikings see when they saw Kirk Cousins? Because I'm not going to just sit here and just completely bash Kirk. Kirk has had some good games. He's had some really nice comebacks. You know, he's got a great, powerful arm that can get you down the field. And, you know, I think Kirk has had some moments that you say, man, there's some great potential there. But $84 million? I don't know about that one, man. In studio right now, before we hit our first break, we have Connor Mathis, current sports engineer and PA who wants to also chime in on this. First off, Connor, did you check out the game last night, and what were your impressions of what Kirk was not able to do in that game?
I clocked in a little bit. I just saw mostly the first half, more of a defensive slugfest is what I was watching. I kind of tuned out afterwards, but I was still following on Twitter, seeing the feeds of people talking about the game. But I would say I'm not sure if Kirk Cousins is overrated so much as he's overpaid. Like, with going into...
That's the same thing, right?
Yeah, I don't know about that. Because
what distinguishes being overpaid and being overrated? What separates the two?
Going into the season, how many people... Where would you think Kirk Cousins would be? How many people were actually saying, oh, this is an elite guy? I mean, if you watch his career, he's like an Alex Smith, like, middle-of-the-road kind of guy. Not bad by any means, but not top-10 quarterback. So, I mean, and that's just what he's put on film. So, like... paying him $84 million when you know that he's not a top-10 quarterback, I think that's more on the Vikings and more a testament to, like, you know, in the NFL, if you're a quarterback, you hit free agent market, it's you got to get paid a ridiculous amount of money. But the other thing too is, I mean, look at the Vikings situation. They had Case Keenum. Were they going to pay Case Keenum that money? I mean, he's better. We all know he's better than Case Keenum, but he's not an elite quarterback. I don't know if you can count him as overrated if he is. Not even what most people consider a top-10 quarterback. I'd say that the Vikings paid way too much for what you knew you were going to get outside of, like, college, where of course he was, like, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the country. But, like, in the NFL, he's a middle of the road kind of guy. So I
think he is. But I think the perception of Kirk was a bit skewed because, you know, you look at what the Redskins deal with Kirk. I believe they franchise tagged him three times.
Yeah,
It was three times.
But like,
and they were looking at Kirk Cousins and saying, "Yeah, I don't." Well, first off, they couldn't come to an agreement when it comes to the money in the moolah, right? But at the same time, I mean, I also think that in the back of their mind, and I'm not saying that. I mean, we're talking about the Washington Redskins here. This is one of the most poorly managed NFL franchises in the game today. But I think when they looked at Kirk Cousins, I don't know if they saw a long-term quarterback for their franchise, period. So they said, all right, let's just franchise tag him this year and let's see what he does. Okay, well, he shows some potential. I don't want to sign him long-term. Let's do it again. Oh, let's do it a third time. And, you know, I think we're starting to see why they did that. I'm with you. I think the Vikings throwing $84 million at him for an unproven quarterback at that, they made a mistake there.
Well, yeah. And the other thing, too, with it is, you know, when Washington kept franchise tagging him, they were basically just putting off having to pay him that extended time.
Right.
So, like,
exactly.
if the first year where they franchise tagged him, they would have paid him that. I believe his contract would have been somewhere between like 17, 20 million. But then, you know, Matthew Stafford got a new deal, and then Derek Carr got a new deal, and Blake Bortles got a new deal. And every single time they kept pushing it down the line, the contract got bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
So, and finally, when Washington said, all right, enough's enough, we're not going to commit long term, they were still shelling out the money, but they had set the price gauge for him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, for
like,
sure. Yeah.
So, again,
it's more about the market than you think.
Exactly.
Because I think when you look at a lot of quarterbacks in the league today, I mean, you know, there's a lot of contracts that you just kind of sit there and just scratch your head, you know, when you equate that contract to the talent of the player. I mean, we're having that conversation with Matthew Stafford right now this season because Matty Staff and the amount of money he's getting paid, he is not producing, and he has had a poor year. These are just two of the cases in the NFL that we are discussing when it comes to contracts, you know, not equating to talent and production that we're seeing from that respective player. And you look at Cousins, I also think this goes to the argument as well. I mean, the Vikings, I think Kirk is a solid game manager.
Exactly.
That's what it is. You know, Kirk, you know, the Vikings are looking at this and saying, okay, we got the defense. The Vikings defense, you know, like Kirk said in the post-game interview, that's one of the best defenses in the National Football League. They can hunker down and they can frustrate quarterbacks. They can frustrate running backs. They got a pretty solid defensive line. Corners are great. Shout out to Trey Waynes, also a former Michigan State player as well. But, you know, so they were looking at this and saying, all right, if we just get a quarterback who can just manage the offense, you know, doesn't have to throw up a ton of crazy mind-boggling stats, we can get somewhere. And they were looking at Kirk and saying that because, you know, Connor, he entered this year, you know, throwing for more than 9,000 yards, completing about 68% of his passes over the last two seasons. That's solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe that's even, you know, look at those numbers. That's maybe even a notch above being a game managing quarterback. So I can see the thought process, but man, watching that last night was frustrating. Yeah. It really was.
And the other thing too is they've been swept under a rug. That offensive unit's been through, like, in terms of staff, has been through a lot. They had their offensive line tight ends coach, and I believe he was an assistant coach. I'm not sure on that last one. Mm. Tony Sperano died in the very beginning of the year. He's gone. He was a big part of that offense. Then you have the apparent there was a rift between Mike Zimmer and John DeFilippo, and he got fired at noon.
Right, I saw that. I was just about to bring it up.
Yeah, DeFilippo got fired at noon, so there was a rift between, like, oh, we should be doing this versus we should be doing that. And with a game, like you said, game manager type quarterback, that's not good.
It's not
that's
good.
That's not good at all.
Yeah, that happened. You know, like you said, around noon they fired the offensive coordinator. So you know, we'll see what happens now with the Minnesota Vikings. But you know, it's just interesting when you see the amount of money that some of these quarterbacks, you know, make, and you look at the production that they give. It's just like, man. And I think it really speaks to how it's really tough to get a solid quarterback in the NFL today. And sure, you got, you know, players like your Tom Brady's and your Ben Roethlisberger's and Aaron Rodgers, all three quarterbacks I just named who are, you know, now on the back nine of their careers. You know, you got a quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. They talk about the young guns here. Patrick Mahomes, who's unreal. I mean, my goodness, it's so fun watching Patrick Mahomes play.
See that no-look
pass? I saw the no-look pass. This dude is doing things I've never seen done on the gridiron. Maybe since, like Mike Vick, maybe?
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe Mike. Yeah, I think that's a good comparison because you just do not see what Patrick Mahomes is doing. He's able to run. He's able to send the ball.
He's
a clean 60 yards.
He's a walking, talking Madden video game, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's fun watching him play. But, you know, you also bring up Baker Mayfield, who's been a pleasant surprise this year as well. You know, how about, you know, Andrew Luck? I mean, what a bounce back, right? I mean, I think he's in the MVP conversation. I think he'll probably go to Mahomes, but yeah. Andrew Luck, his name deserves to be in that conversation. So I'm bringing up the elite of the elite, even Russell Wilson still. I mean, we saw him last night. It's really tough to get a quarterback like the names I just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So when you do see some kind of potential in a player like Kirk Cousins, you want to say to yourself, all right, we can work with that. And I think Kirk is a work with that quarterback talent.
It's kind of like you know, Ryan Tannehill with the Dolphins, Andy Dalton with the Bengals. It's like, well, we got something that we know is going to get us 6 or 7 wins. We just need to build a team that can get us the extra 2 or 3 in the playoffs. And that's I think that's honestly a problem with the NFL. I mean, Blake Bortles got a ridiculous contract they had no business getting. And until teams stop doing this, oh, this average guy came on the market, I got to pay him like I would pay a Matthew Stafford, who I still think is like a fringe top 10 quarterback.
Yeah, I think he is too. I think everybody, to real briefly had this conversation before we hit this first break, Connor, to discuss Matthew Stafford right now. Matthew Stafford, sure, he deserves all the criticism that he is getting in the world right now because he has played, he's played like crap this year.
Oh, yeah?
You know, to just plain come out and just plainly say it black and white, he has played like crap this year. And, you know, you compare this season to what we've seen from Matthew Stafford in the last, like, 3 to 5 years, he's not the same guy. And I think right now what we're seeing from Matthew, just looking at him, one, he's not 100% healthy.
Oh, no.
I don't know why Matt Patricia didn't bench him, especially in that second half. I mean, the guy was clearly hurt. And I'm sitting there saying, dude, you know, there's still a chance that the Lions are going to make the playoffs. But, gosh, it's very slim, very slim. But there's still mathematically a chance that they can make it. But, you know, Matthew Stafford, from what I've seen and looking at his body language and demeanor, I just think he just is burnt out, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, mentally he just isn't there. He's not the same guy that we've seen in the past. And I think that's why I'm not trying to make excuses for Matthew Stafford, but I think he's just so discouraged. I mean, looking at him after drives and you know, watching him go out there and just underthrow guys and his inaccuracy and his reaction to those muff plays. He just doesn't seem like he's all here mentally right now, Connor. I think there's more to this story than people are seeing right now.
And then they take away his number one guy, Golden Tate, because they didn't want to commit to him. Which, okay, I can kind of understand it. Maybe you think Golden Tate is more of a number two receiver. Cool. But when that is the one thing that Matthew Stafford relies on, and that is his go-to guy when everything else falls apart, I just don't see why you do it. And then, and I think it's another problem too is they play like you said, they played him. He looks like he's hurt. Who's their backup quarterback? They don't got a backup quarterback. That's another problem with around the NFL is you have these average or like fringe elite players, and there's no one behind them. So if something does happen where you need to go to the number two guy, he's not there. Like, I'm sorry,
yeah, Matt Castle is
not going to do anything.
It's Matt Castle.
You can put Matt Castle on rookie in Madden, and he throws still four picks and maybe get you 50 yards.
I mean, he's 36 years old, too. I mean,
he's not good.
He's knocking on the door 40. So, yeah. All right, let's hit our first break. And when we come back, I do want to also, let you guys know the specifics of how the Detroit Lions can still make the playoffs. Believe it or not, they can still make the playoffs. I wouldn't bet your mother's house on it, but there's still a chance. That and more, you are listening to the Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. About 20 minutes left here in the hour. You know what? I'm going to shoot him a text after the show. I'm going to work on trying to get Graham Couch on the show, if not sometime this week, sometime next week, because, I mean, his piece, I don't know if you guys have read this, his piece written in the Lansing State Journal, Graham Couch, of course, beat writer for Michigan State football and basketball for the Lansing State Journal. Graham is a voter in the Associated Press Top 25 Men's College Basketball poll. And, I mean, my goodness. I mean, and it's expected. When you write a piece like this, it's expected that you are going to get uber criticism from so many. And you talk about the fan bases of a Kentucky, of a Kansas, of a Duke. I mean, no, those fans are crazy. I mean, the Cameron Crazies, for instance, right? I mean, the name is it speaks for itself. Those fan bases, they're diehard, and they love their college basketball teams. Graham did not rank Duke, Kansas, and Tennessee in his Associated Press College basketball top 25 ballot. Kentucky is still in his top 25. But Duke, Kansas, and Tennessee aren't. And I knew immediately when I read this piece, I hopped on Twitter and I just typed in the search bar Graham Couch. I just wanted to see, you know, the type of reaction that Graham was getting nationally for this piece. And oh boy, I mean, some of these people are just going at him. I mean, at Purge 99, what is Graham Couch doing? I'm trying to comb through the tweets, which is really tough to do right now. The tweets that don't have offensive language, that are FCC compliant right now, that I can read. And I'm struggling right now because I'm scrolling right now and I just can't. There are a few. Here's at U of M Kerwin. One, does Graham Couch really not have Kansas, Duke, and Tennessee and Auburn not ranked? And two, why in the heck does Graham Couch have a vote in the AP poll? At Blue Devil, I told you these Duke fans, at Blue Devil Farm D, he says, quote, honest question, how old are you? I can't imagine you being older than 15. I can scroll on some more. At Give Him Six 1987 says, this is mind-blowing and just dumb. And again, these are the kind tweets. I'm reading the kind tweets right now. At Serb SS3, who let this man have a job? I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, Graham has gone viral from this. I want to have Graham on to defend himself. First off, I don't agree with Graham's top 25. I mean, come on. It's Duke, for goodness sake. I think Duke is the best team in college basketball. I don't know how anybody can look at Duke and say they're not. But Graham's arguing about the schedule of a Duke, of a Kansas, you know, of a Tennessee. And that's why he's really – that's where his argument has its quote-unquote foundation. I don't agree with it, and I think there's – you know, this really surprised me because I don't think Graham is a guy who would write something just for clicks. I know Graham personally. I don't think he's that kind of a guy. But it's hard not to read a headline like this. Why Duke, Kansas, and Tennessee aren't on my AP college basketball top 25. It's hard to read that and think to yourself, okay, that's not clickbait. I think it's clickbait. I think it is. But I want to have Graham on. I know him personally. He's a great dude. He's one of my favorite guys in the media game here locally. And, you know, I think he does an outstanding job. I want to have him on to defend himself. And I'm curious, you know, when you write a piece like this, and this is what I also, you know, tell young journalists. I mean, first off, you want to be true to yourself. You want to be honest. You want to be real, especially in 2018. Those who really thrive in this industry today, I mean, you got to have an opinion. You know, gone are the cookie cutter days of just being a reporter, reporting the facts, and oh, that's it. You know, if you really want to be, if you really want to make it, and you know, it's all about now, which, you know, we can have a whole hour show on how journalism is changing today, whether you like it or not. That's where it's going now. You have to have an opinion if you want to be successful or relatively successful in this game today. Sure, solid reporters have success. I'm not saying that. But if you want to be special today, you got to have your opinion. And Graham Couch, of course, does that because he's a columnist. You have to give your opinion as a columnist. I want to have Graham want to defend himself and really dive into why he decided to put this piece together. And how he's dealing with the backlash. Again, going back to my initial point, I mean, if you want to put your opinion out there and, you know, if you honestly feel a way like this, like Graham does, and you put together a piece like this, you have to be willing to deal with the backlash. And you got to have rhino skin. You know, I talked to a lot of young journalists today. I mean, they don't know if they could deal with the kind of social media backlash that comes with being a personality in 2018's media. Simple as that. You have to deal with the criticism. Can you deal with the criticism? You know, it hit me real early when I got this job here at WKAR, being paid to give my opinion that not everybody was going to like me on the air. Not everybody was going to agree with me. I got tweets. I got calls. Who is this young pup taking over for Earl Robinson who's been here for, you know, almost 40 years? You know, you got to have rhino skin. You can't let that stuff get to you. So Graham certainly has rhino skin. He's been doing this for a while. He's not new to the game. But especially when you read some of these tweets, I mean, they're attacking Graham personally. Just idiots going at Graham personally. I mean, I just the language that's being used. I won't repeat it here on the air. I just can't. But, you know, this is what happens when you put out a piece like this. But I don't agree with Graham's top 25 at all. in the reasoning why he put out a top 25 that doesn't include teams like Duke, you know, a team like Tennessee, a team like Kansas, I just think there's a lot of holes in the argument. All right? So your reaction to it, I'm curious. And again, we're going to try and work on getting Graham on the show. If not this week, we'll definitely get him on next week. Okay. And I don't know if you had, we got Connor and Alec here as well. Alec behind the glass, Connor live here in studio. I don't know if you guys read the piece at all. We'll start with Connor. You're chuckling. And I know why. It's a funny, let me ask you this. Do you think it was clickbait?
I'm going to say no, only because Graham has been doing this since at least last year is when I started to notice, like, all right, these are some hot takes. these are wildfires.
I appreciate Graham's work because Graham will give you a take that isn't your normal boring read. He is going to think outside the box. And what I love, what Graham does is he'll back it up. You know, he just doesn't spew venom. He'll give you a reason why he's writing a piece like this. You may not agree with it, but he'll at least back it up. The same way I feel, you know, about, you know, a guy who I enjoy listening to, even though I don't agree with most of what he says, but, you know, a national personality like a Colin Cowherd. Colin, you may not agree with everything Colin says, but Connor, he will back it up. And that's what Graham does as well.
That's true.
But go ahead.
No, Alec and I were actually reading this before the show, and I'm like, all right, Alec, who did you say? I asked you, who do you usually think on when you think AP top 25 college basketball? Who'd you say?
Well, I mean, I said the obvious ones, like, you know, I thought Duke, North Carolina, you know, Tennessee, you know, all the ones that you would think.
Kansas.
But, you know, the fact I just don't like the fact that San Francisco was picked before Duke and Tennessee.
Yeah.
It just does not make sense to me.
You sound so puzzled, like all of us do.
Don't forget about St. John's. Don't forget about St. John's at 25.
So, yeah, it is. It's a very interesting piece. For those curious what Graham's top 10 looks like, 1, Gonzaga, 2, Michigan, 3, Nevada, which is, and I think Nevada is a solid program.
Nevada
is solid, but they're not the best team in the nation. 4, Virginia, 5, Buffalo, 6, Michigan State, 7, Wisconsin, 8, North Carolina, 9, Florida State, 10, Ohio State. I won't give you the entire top 25, but yeah, there you have that. But teams like, you know, St. John's is in this as well. San Francisco is in it as well. Furman is in it. Furman's playing great basketball.
Playing really
They've been
well.
A pleasant surprise as well in the world of college hoops. But, you know, it's an interesting piece. I'm going to get Graham on, I promise you guys. If not this week, next week, we'll get him on to clarify. All right? So anything
you
else?
You could get a UNC fan to do a top 25, a diehard UNC fan, they still throw Duke in there somewhere. You can't leave Duke out.
You can't
put him at 25.
That.
If you're really put him at 25, you just cannot leave Duke with that team that people people were arguing like, oh, could they beat the Cavaliers?
Right.
Kind of team.
Right.
You can't leave that out. You just can't.
And also, you know, Graham getting this AP vote. You know, I wonder what other voters of the Associated Press or members of the Associated Press think of Graham's poll. That's another layer to this conversation as well that we'll hopefully dive into with Graham. All right, I just want to comb through. I want to give Detroit Lions fans some kind of hope right now because I know you think the season's over. You're 5-8. You just beat the Cardinals, though. But you're 5-8. You want, just like I was rooting for, the Lions to completely tank so that you get a high draft pick, but with that win over the Cardinals, you're now, you know, predicted to have like the 10th overall pick in the NFL draft. But I just want to give you some hope that the playoffs are still, and I wish we had like the playoffs by it right now, but the playoffs are still somewhat, it's very slim, but you know, you still got a slim chance at the playoffs. And this is how it would have to play out, Connor, if the Lions were to make the playoffs. This is written a really interesting piece in the Free Press from Kirkland Crawford. So, the Lions, they, of course, must win out and finish 8-8. And there's also a few other things that have to happen, of course, with that, Connor. from there, after finishing 8-8, they would need the 5-8 Giants to lose at least one more game. The Giants play the Titans, the Colts, and my Cowboys. Also, they need the 5-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers to do the same either at the Ravens, at the Cowboys, or at home to the Falcons.
Those are both doable.
Those are both doable, I think.
Okay,
I think that's not crazy, right? Also, there's also that 6-7 Carolina Panthers team, which I don't know what is going on with Carolina right now. My goodness, they've lost, what, four or five straight?
Something like that.
Crazy. The most recent loss coming at the hands of Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns this past weekend. But then there's 6-7 Carolina, which the Lions already did beat this year. You know, Cam Newton's team, this is coming from this piece from the Free Press. Cam Newton's team has to play the Saints twice before the season ends with the Falcons in between. If they lose just one of these games, the Lions would be ahead of them. The Lions also need Washington to lose twice against either Jacksonville, Tennessee, or the Eagles, and they need that same Philadelphia team, the defending Super Bowl champs at 6-7, to lose twice more. They have to go to the Rams, and then they will host the Texans before that finale. And then there's Minnesota. Minnesota just lost last night to Seattle. The Vikings are 6-6-1. They have the Dolphins, your Dolphins, the Miracle in Miami. Shout out to the Dolphins this past weekend. They have the Dolphins, Lions, and Bears left on that schedule because of that tie. The Lions and Bears both beat Minnesota. They finished with 8 losses and can only have 7 wins at the most. It's a lot to have to play out there. But I think a few of those are very possible,
Connor. I say the first half is doable. The other ones you need a lot of help.
Washington to lose twice against either Jacksonville or Tennessee or the Eagles. I think that's
going to happen.
That's going to happen, right? Philly. They need Philly to lose twice more. With the way Philly's playing, that could possibly happen as well. This isn't crazy to think about. If you had to peg a percentage on the likelihood that these scenarios play out and the Lions somehow, some way make the playoffs, what would your percentage be, Connor?
30%.
30% that this plays out.
30% because that lower half is so bad.
It is. It really is.
And you got people faltering at the top. I don't know. I'm 30% chance.
Well, you're around me. I'm 35. Okay. I think there's a 35% chance, which is pretty solid. Alec, what would you say?
I got a hot take here. I'm going to say
Don't say the Lions are going to make the playoff.
No. It's the same chances that Michigan State had right before that botched punt. I'd say it's mathematically the same.
You're talking about for the U of M game?
Right before the botched punt, it was like a 0.0-something% chance.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, then the punt happened, but I don't think that same result, that miracle result's going to happen for the Lions. I really don't.
I hear you, man. A lot had to play out, but I just want to give Lions fans hope. You know, I like to do that from time to time because I talk to Lions fans and they are just so depressed week in and week out. You can't see Connor on the live stream, but you are decked out in Miami Dolphins apparel right now. The miracle in Miami, pretty special this past Sunday. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that real quick, Connor.
I was in the parking lot and saw it, and it was just crazy.
Just crazy. Crazy moment.
Crazy game, crazy moment. I called all of my Patriot fans I know and bragged.
Love it. Love it. All right, folks. That does it for this Tuesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Thanks so much for being a part of the hour. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Until then, be easy, people.